Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. We were so late getting on. We had a guest lined up this evening, and I do not know what happened. This is whatever. So at the last minute, I called Alan. And what we were going to be talking about tonight, folks, and I hope that she will be able to come on with us, we were going to be talking about aspartame. I've got a video, a DVD, actually, and this thing is just atrocious. It's terrible what's going on and the deaths and the illness that has been created by this terrible additive excitotoxin that has been added to so many foods. Anyway, Alan is with us, and today is the 18th. It is Monday, the 18th of July in the year 2005. And I sure hope you stayed with us. Well, those of you who are listening did stay with us, didn't you? We were 5 minutes late getting on. Alan, thanks for being here tonight.
That's a pleasure.
Yeah, right. Way last minute, huh?
Last minute, yeah. and a very hot night, too.
Oh, boy, is it hot there, too, Alan?
On Saturday, it hit 115.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, actual temperature or heat index?
That was the temperature on the thermometer. It was over 100 in the shade.
Oh, yeah. My God. And what is it going down to in the evening?
It's around just above 80 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes 85.
But I mean Saturday.
Yeah.
What, it went down to 80 at that night?
Oh, that night, no. It stayed around, well into darkness, it was still just below 90. Yeah. And they were spraying the skies like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, I don't know, about probably 90 here. I was going to do a check on the weather bug and see what the heat index is because it feels almost like it did when it was 96.
Yes.
You know, the heat itself is just something else. I want to share something with our listeners, something that you mentioned to me, Alan. And I don't want to forget to say this because I think it could be very helpful for many of us this coming winter. Folks, I was talking to Alan. You know, I'm heating with natural gas here now that Chuck is gone. I'm not, you know, using the firewood, and the gas. The prices are just terrible. If they keep raising them, I don't know what's. Well, I do understand it's part of rural cleansing because those of us who live out in the country, we have these. What the heck do they call them? Alan, it's supposed to be all the people are involved.
They want us into the habitat areas.
No, but what I'm talking about is that the gas company itself.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what it is. When I lived in Carlinville, Illinois, it was the same thing, and the electric prices there were just absolutely terrible. But anyway, folks, not this past winter, but the winter before, I kept my thermostat at 60. Sometimes I got brave and put it down to 59. And I was wearing several layers of clothing in order to even have a modicum of... I was comfortable, although my hands and my nose and stuff was cold, but I literally was wearing three layers of clothing. And last winter, I kept my thermostat at 62, and on account of that, my heating bill went up $100 a month. When I called to ask them about it, she said, well, you've used 10 more decatherms this year than you did last year at the same time. I said, oh, I see. Last year I was wearing three layers of clothing to keep warm, and this year I'm wearing only two. Well, what Alan suggested, when I mentioned to Alan, how come, like in the spring, in the fall, if it's 60 degrees and you put on a pair of sweats and a flannel shirt or a sweatshirt, you're very, very comfortable. And yet I was freezing at 60 degrees in my home in the wintertime. And I asked Alan, why would that be? And the one thing that Alan mentioned is that because it is so dry, the cold is a dry cold. And he said that if we put a humidifier in the house and add humidity to the atmosphere within, that the 60 degrees would be probably the same thing, huh, Alan?
Yeah, it certainly helps, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, nothing else makes any sense.
Yeah.
60 degrees is 60 degrees.
Yeah.
And yet it's 60 degrees in the wintertime, my God, you're freezing.
I know. It's, if you put humidity into the air, it's completely different from dry, warm air. And it lasts longer, too, by the way. It keeps your heating bills down.
Well, I guess it would.
It actually holds the heat, you see, the moisture.
Uh-huh.
And it will your furnace will kick on less, you know.
Yeah. Well, I heat with baseboard hot water heat,
yep,
which is wonderful. I love it. I had that in Illinois also. And it is a wonderful heat, and you don't have the forced air blowing in.
Mm-hmm.
And when
yep.
you're, it is a comfortable warmth, but I know that it has to be what you're saying because nothing else makes any sense.
Yeah, and if you get static shocks in the winter time in your house, that's a sign it's too dry.
Yeah, well, I don't recall getting static shock
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason, but it has to be that.
Yeah.
Because we've had, even, you know, in the early summer and, of course, in the spring, we had a lot of days that were 60 and 58 and et cetera. I only wore a pair of sweats and a flannel shirt.
Yeah.
And I was very, very comfortable, Alan.
Yep.
And I thank you for that. And I wanted to tell our listeners this because it might slip my mind when winter comes to tell them this. So you keep this in mind, folks.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alan, what...
Well, there's no doubt that energy is going to be the big thing. You know, we're going into a crisis point of crisis creation. And that's why the gasoline is so high. They're modifying the weather like crazy. There's no doubt about it. It's the Wizard of Oz with his advanced science, you know.
You know,
doing this.
Remember I told you I heard on the Weather Channel that day?
Uh-huh.
It had been really unseasonably cold.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started nice and warming up, and she says, well, we're keeping the temperatures up there for you guys to give you a break this weekend.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? They're really doing it.
Oh, they are.
I mean, I don't know if these weather people, do you think they know about this, Alan?
I'm sure they do, because, I mean, even NASA had to put out some kind of cover story to explain the satellite photographs of the Earth, especially North America, which was just almost a fog of, they called them contrails from the aircraft, of course, chemicals. We know it's chemicals because many people have tested.
They said that it was commercial aircraft, didn't they?
Yeah, and let's be honest, I mean,
right.
Commercial aircraft didn't suddenly... In fact, there's less commercial aircraft this year than there was last year.
Well, are they going to make X's in the skies with underlines and pretty sun?
Oh, yeah, and they're probably... They
right.
Aimed, you know, with the O and the X and the straight line, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, no, they're playing games, plus the harp can be picked up on the shortwave. If you scan the shortwave,
I just lost
the frequencies.
I just lost some volume on you. Did
uh-huh.
you do any... Oh, there we are.
Yep.
Say that again.
No, you'll find on the shortwave, if you scan it, you'll find where the harp frequencies are. If you scan during the day or in the evening, and sometimes early in the morning, around 9,000... kilohertz, you'll find the harp, and it makes a wow, 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 wow sound constant. And then around noontime, it's just before the same station that WWCR is on, it's just a little bit before
12.160.
Uh-huh. So just before there, around 1200 or 12,000, you'll find it. And then in the evening, again, it changes just before 5070, and generally it'll stay on that all night till early morning.
What will it be at, about 6,000 or what?
Yeah, you just scan from about 5,000 onwards
uh-huh.
till you come across it before the first commercial station.
And how do you know that's harp, Alan?
It wasn't there a couple of years ago. They were testing it once in a while, but... about a year and a half ago or so, they started to use it full time. It doesn't sound like anything else on the shortwave.
Uh-huh.
It's a pulsation, a very strong signal, and it's a pulsing sound it makes. And of course, harp have declared, they always legally tell you, in a sense, what they're doing, even if it's a brief quip somewhere. But they did say that they had... stepped up their generating power, and even the Alaskan one. And remember, there's 56 or more of these harp facilities across the planet.
Yeah, and
so,
there are acres and acres of transmitters, mm-hmm. towers.
Yeah, they can actually link them up in different countries and bounce them off the ionosphere and bring them down on any target, any target they want to hold on a second.
Is that Max?
Probably rabbits, yeah. Yeah, it's a little cat, yeah. I don't know where that came from. That's new.
In the house?
No, outside.
Oh.
But it's coming up this way, but I don't know where that came from. I'm miles from anywhere. But anyway, the harp is playing full time. And, of course, they're spraying as well like crazy. Even when the storms are going on, you see them laying these lines, you know. They never stop.
You mean when we're having thunderstorms?
Yeah, you'll see it before. In fact, I've got used to telling when there's going to be a thunderstorm, because it's a different kind of spray they lay out. They lay it on very, very thickly, and it turns into that almost like looking through a polythene sheet, you know, across the sky.
Yeah.
And that's the polymers, which is a form of plastic molecule that they are spraying, and it's quite
something to see. Well, besides the metals...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Besides the metals.
Well, the metals come down too. And,
you know, it occurs to me that occasionally we do have new listeners,
uh-huh.
I think. And
yeah.
We're sitting here talking as though everybody knows exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Just briefly explain what the Heart Project is and what we're...
Well, this was this a rural research program, the high altitude one, which is supposed to... It first came out in the Baltic region when the Soviet Union was using one in Riga.
Was that the one called the Woodpecker?
Yes, that's right. It basically, all the ham radio enthusiasts were coming off the band. They couldn't even pick up the certain bands because they were blocked out by the Woodpecker. And it was like a tapping sound at that time, very fast though. So eventually they targeted it. They could actually diagnose where it was coming from, and the Russians admitted they were using this type of powerful standing wave, as they called it, which they bounced up into the ionosphere, and then it was targeted down on North America. So it was invented by Tesla, apparently, in the early 1900s. And Tesla himself said that he was stopping experimentation with it because it superheated the atmosphere. It caused a standing wave which could be many, many miles wide. And around the standing wave, where nothing really moved, just hot air, you'll have storms and floods even, like a vortex around it, you know, like a tunnel. And he said this could superheat the atmosphere so much that the atmosphere could ignite.
Wow.
And yet here they are building these things all over the place and actually using them and targeting North America.
You know, on the video that was made called Are There Holes in Heaven?
Uh-huh.
Fred Ehrlich has it. I didn't see it on his list. He always sends an update list. Fred Ehrlich is the one who has the, he calls it a tape ministry. He has over 1,000 videotapes. But anyway, it's titled, Are There Holes in Heaven? Dr. Nick Begich is on it. There's also a physicist. And what she was explaining, she said that the ionosphere is sort of like a bubble or a balloon, a bubble around the Earth.
Yeah.
And she said when they send this very concentrated beam of energy into the ionosphere, and the Earth is rotating... She said, they don't know, but what it could just literally flash holes right into the ionosphere and totally destroy the ionosphere.
That's right.
And her fear, her concern, was that they know not what they do and that they can be causing irreparable damage to this planet and its atmosphere and outer.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I say, they definitely... have advanced science. I think it's actually more advanced than the public are even aware of or being told of, and I'm sure they know exactly what temperatures to create. They do admit, in fact, they signed a treaty not to use this weather modification and HARP technology. They signed a treaty at the UN back in the 1970s.
Yeah, ENMAD treaty.
And on that treaty they said that they will not use it against other countries. But that means that they're open to use it on their own people.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about within.
Mm-hmm.
It prohibits the hostile use of the technology
mm-hmm.
that can cause hurricanes, tidal waves,
and
earthquakes
mm-hmm.
like the tsunami that hit.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they can do that. They can cause drought and
I think that
can
was
cause flooding.
I think that was 19. It was either 72 or 74, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Folks, think about this. The technology it didn't say in this NMOD treaty that the United Nations did, it didn't say that it prohibits the research or the development. It says it prohibits the use of weather modification techniques, hostile use. Mm-hmm. And so already back then, they were admitting that they can cause earthquakes, they can cause floods, hurricanes, all kinds of damaging weather and earth upheavals.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Alberta, where they grow so much of the corn and wheat and so on, they, for the last 4 years, they had a drought for 4 years. In fact, they had a plague of locusts, well, not locusts.
Well, I think that's what, isn't that what a grasshopper is?
Yeah, it was grasshoppers last year, yeah. And so most of the farmers have been going under one by one. And this year, in Ontario, typically of a standing wave, and nothing moved, the air didn't even move here in Ontario. Just no rain up until about yesterday. Alberta was getting flooding for the last 2 months or so. Complete flooding every day. You know, whole towns were being upset with this thing.
And that's the big agricultural area, huh?
Yeah, so they've been put under, and Chile apparently is being built up for the NAFTA, for joining NAFTA, and Monsanto and Archer Daniel Midlands have been using our tax money through the NAFTA grants to build up the huge agricultural business in Chile. So it's interesting that as we're getting put under, and as farmers are being put under, here's the big boys, the big commercial farms, ready to go with all their produce that we have paid for, basically.
Genetically modified produce.
Yeah, yeah. And that will start to supply North America when there is no farming here. So everything is pre-planned. Everything that happens in this system is pre-planned.
It's difficult for some people to grasp, even though I believe that within them they know it. It's just so difficult to accept, you know, to climb out of. Well, you called it free-falling, like free-falling?
Yeah.
Like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute.
That's right.
If you want the truth, we have to be willing to let go of all of everything that we thought we knew.
Mm-hmm.
And begin anew, so to speak. And the one thing that I'm clear about is that I know that we're much, much closer to the truth than I know for myself, than I have ever been. And it has become real clear to me, unless I was there, I still don't absolutely know. I mean, I know that there is truth, except that, for example, Alan, I received an email. I don't know if this appeared on the news or not. 32 little Iraqi children were killed by a car bomb. And I would imagine if it was on the news, they said that it was, you know, the human, what do they call them? But anyway, there was a report done by a Palestinian, I don't know if it was a radio or newspaper or whatever. There are actual photographs that they showed the U.S. soldiers in handing down candy to Iraqi children.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did, according to this report, they lured the children into the street, into the area, and they said that there was a vehicle there that they were afraid that was had an explosive attached to it, and they wanted to keep the children away from it. Well, then they finally told the people it's okay, there's nothing wrong with the vehicle.
Yeah.
So they had all those children in that area giving them candy and Pokemon toys, and then they took off like a bat out of hell.
Yeah.
And the car exploded. And they said it wasn't TNT because it left a crater in the street. It killed 32 little Iraqi children and wounded 10 others that were in the area.
Yeah.
And I sent it over to Darren to put onto our website. And I realized, you know, truly, we don't know if even that is the truth. It looks, the pictures, they had the photographs of the soldiers handing down the candy, and they had photographs of adults with their, just sobbing with blood all over their faces and their hands in their faces at the children's death. And yet, what I put before it is, if this is the truth, then the American boys and girls / men and women have become the new world barbarians.
Oh, yeah.
32 little children exploded, Alan, for what?
Yeah.
But
well, there's so little you can take for, well, you can't take anything on the news today for granted.
See, this wasn't on the news. That's the point.
Oh, okay.
See, this came from a Palestinian or Arab newspaper, and whoever put it online translated parts of it for the, you know, for the English speaking people, and just highlighted certain aspects of it. But that's what I'm saying, and to me, the pictures gave evidence, but it occurred to me that the pictures could be pictures of anything. But
We're in a time, as I say, of chaos, because it's manufactured chaos. And to bring in a new age, which this is, they always create a chaos, you know. That's why your gas is going through the ceiling, the price of gasoline. All energy is going through the roof. They're modifying the weather to create some weather chaos. And blame the public for driving and causing it. And the public believe what they see on the news. They think they're causing the smog. But they never look at the sky and see the stuff being sprayed right above their head.
You know, probably it was back in 1992 mm-hmm. when I first became awake and became involved. I read, actually it was an article about ethanol and how easy it is to make it. There were actually instructions on how to make ethanol and run your car on it.
Yeah.
And in this article, it said that the Rothschilds were buying up at that time just hundreds of thousands of acres of land in Brazil to grow the corn so that when they go to ethanol, they will be still the suppliers of our fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll probably make it illegal to make your own ethanol.
Yes, they will. You won't be allowed to distill anything at all. They already have those laws in place because any spirit that you still distill yourself, they track down on.
Yeah, I thought about that. It's like alcohol, yes?
Oh, yeah.
So the revenueers will come in and crash up your tanks and...
Yes, there was a fellow who was telling people in Canada a couple of years ago, I think online, and it was on the regular news, he was telling people how to make their own and how to build the still to make it, and the government did crack down on them and arrested them.
Well, you have to have a license to do that.
That's right. Well, you cannot share power, you see. I mean, that's how you keep power. You don't share it.
Yeah, well, the definition, I remember reading this, of a license mm-hmm. is giving you permission to do something that would otherwise be illegal.
Illegal, yeah.
We're at the half hour here. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, I'm sorry for our late start tonight. And I'm very grateful for Alan for coming on with us, because I certainly wasn't prepared to, with information or to present to you tonight. And I want to remind you that this broadcast is sponsored by you, by our listeners. And as I said, we are into our seventh year, which is quite a miraculous thing. So as I said a few days ago, you are the miracle, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll be back right after this. Get your pen in hand. You'll get my address if you would like to help support this broadcast. And we'll be right back with Alan White.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
All right, we're back with Alan Watt. I wanted to let you know, too, folks, it isn't posted yet, but Chapter 16 of the book, Jewish Persecution, that is online and has been underway for 3 years, has been sent over for posting. And 17 is almost done. I stayed in the house today, Alan. I took a break.
Uh-huh.
And I spent about 50 hours last week in that garden. And boy, did I ever wear myself out. So I've been inside the last 2 days. Well, it rained yesterday. And I just spent inside trying to take care of some things in here. And I've been spending some time on the book.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's... I put those other, like that bunch printed up that were destroyed at the printers.
Oh, good.
I got another set made up there.
Okay, now, I keep losing volume on you for some reason, and you're back mm-hmm. again. It's interesting. You just go real, real, almost far away. Why don't you give your address and tell the listeners how they can get the books?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've got three of them, and I'm calling them cutting through, and you can imagine what I'm cutting through, and it's 1, 2, and 3. They're $25 each, and they go through the Freemasonry aspect, they go through the historical aspect of this, the religious collusion with different agencies and crowns and so on, or countries. Bringing us to where we are today and where they're going from here, and it's documented as much as possible. There's no real speculation because it's spelled out for you to follow. So if you want them, send $25. That's an international postal order from your post office, and send it to Alan Watt.
It's 25 for each book.
That's right. Uh-huh. It's W-A-T-T, and its address is Site 41, which is S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Estere, which is like Fred Astaire with an E, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1, Canada, and I'll get them out as soon as possible. But the last bunch I had printed up, they destroyed the copies and the master copies, so I had to go through a whole bunch of paste-ups to try and put it all back together.
Wow.
Again. Yeah.
But you did get it all back together.
Yeah, I did, like Humpty Dumpty. Yeah.
Yeah. Although Humpty Dumpty wasn't able to be put back together again.
I know, yeah. But this was a job, I'll tell you, yeah. But these things happen when you're trying to write about things which you don't normally find on the bookstores.
Alan?
Uh-huh.
One of their things from what I understand, in Freemasonry is that they're supposed to revenge the death of Jacques de Molay.
Yeah.
Well, that's recent.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that, about 500 years ago?
Oh, no, Malay was, I think, in the 1300s.
Oh, 1300s.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So about 700 years ago.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
My point is that Freemasonry has been around a lot longer than 1300 years.
it was there in different names, under different names, and thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but it wasn't called Freemasonry at the time?
No, they always used the builder's terminology, because they build society, they build culture, and they change culture.
And they build temples in man's minds.
That's right. And of course, the whole idea of Masonry is Solomon's temple is the individual himself. They rebuild Solomon's temple, meaning they take the basic person and rebuild him, and he becomes a holy temple as a fully pledged Freemason, you know. So they use all these allegories, and it's all in the Old Testament too. It's disguised under different stories. And of course, they didn't invent it. It was there on the go before, all the way back to Egypt and even into Sumer, you know. So it's been here for thousands of years. And Freemasonry that was given to the general public or the middle classes in the 1700s in Europe was a fairly new thing. They'd used primarily the nobility as the builders for thousands of years, but in the 1700s they had to bring in a middle class to help manage the Industrial Revolution, which they were putting society through as a plan, you know. So they had to give them a lesser form of masonry, and so they created Freemasonry for the middle classes, and then for the lower classes eventually. And also for the military. The standing armies have traditionally always been Masonic. All of their drilling, their marching and everything is all Masonic ritual, even if they don't know it themselves. And pretty well every military base has a Masonic temple within it. And when they go abroad, they have a traveling a lodge that goes with them. So the British, before the American Revolution, started up various lodges, and they planted the English Lodge throughout America. Benjamin Franklin joined it. He was one of the first in his area to join it.
Yeah.
And he wrote about it. And eventually, when the British Army came in, they also brought the Orange Lodge with them as a traveling lodge. And
well,
during the battles, or after the battles, Washington and different Masons would cross the lines and share the Masonic Brotherhood with their supposed enemy, the British, in their lodges, and sign their books. So that's the whole thing with Freemasonry.
Yeah.
When there's battles or wars going on, as if they give the Masonic signs to each other and the passwords, they're true brothers, and they must help each other regardless of what side they're on.
I saw a painting that was done depicting George Washington, Cornwallis, the British Cornwallis, and a couple of other of their probably higher-ups, in the army, in a tent during the Revolutionary War, sharing tea and having a little chat.
Yes.
And this was while the, quote, Revolutionary War was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is what chapter 16 and 17 of the book is all about, because, well, it was after Carol Valentine's report that she did on the Noahide laws, and she used I saw the definition before, but I didn't understand it, so I just pretended it wasn't there. The definition of a Freemason is a Noahide, and so I took that one paragraph and set it aside and said, I want to do some more research on this. And then I found a lot of information in an old book called The Cause of World Unrest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very telling. Very telling. The connection, if you would, between what they call themselves Jews, the so-called Jews, and Freemasonry. And the control.
Well, every Freemason becomes a Jew when they join.
They have to, Alan.
No, that's actually called that. The entered apprentice is actually called, to the public, they call it an entered apprentice. To each other, they call it a Jewish apprentice.
Do they really?
And the whole ritual is taken from the mythological Jews who joined, or it wasn't Jews actually, it was Hebrews at that point, supposedly, that joined the secret society of Hiram from Tyre. He came to build, or help build, the temple, which again is all allegory for the story. He had a secret society with him. So these Tyrians or Phoenicians, actually, they were a Phoenician group, and their king was Hiram, supposedly came to Solomon and initiated some of his Solomon's own men into the secret society, and that's what it's all based on. But this is all mythological because, as I say, you can find the traces of the secret society 5,000 years before that. Uh-huh. You'll find it in very, very early Egypt, and you'll also find it within the writings of the priests of Sumer.
You know,
so it's been here for what we can call the beginning of civilization, which is the system. That's what they mean by civilization, the system of rulership with a small learned class holding power over the people, and religious classes who at that time acted as bureaucrats over the people and managed all the public affairs.
That's what they mean
by civilization.
That's the way exactly the way it is today.
Yes, it's their system.
The
it's never
judges,
changed.
The police chiefs, and a lot of the police, the politicians, the bureaucrats, they're all Freemasons.
They're all Freemasons, in fact.
Supreme Court judges.
Peter Wright, who was on trial during Margaret Thatcher's era, he worked for MI5 and MI6, and he was so disgusted with what was happening within the organizations that he wrote a book called Spycatcher. And he tells you that when he was asked to come in as an expert in electronics, that's why he came into it. He said that when he went to the small office where the records keeper, basically, very much like the James Bond movies with Miss Moneypenny, was it? That same sort of type of secretary said to him, "Of course, you must be a Mason." And he says, "No, I'm not." She says, "Wow." She says, "Everyone in this organization is a Freemason." And so he let a lot out of the bag as he wrote that book, Spycatcher. And he also alluded...
And then did you say he was on trial?
Oh, yeah. Margaret Thatcher charged him with disclosing secrets of the realm. So he was charged with treason. And his second book was The A to Z of Spycatching. And that's when she had him arrested. And in it, and during the trial... he did bring up the fact that Lord Rothschild of England, Victor Rothschild, who was one of the few members of the family who also did something else apart from banking, that he was also a scientist, and he was in charge of most of the military secrets of Porton Downs, the military establishment for bacterial and biological warfare. And Peter Wright alluded to the fact that the main spies who all defected from MI6 and MI5 to the Soviets had all been lodgers that all boarded with Lord Rothschild and his wife in their early years. So he was bringing the connections forth that this Mr. Rothschild was passing the secrets on to the Soviets.
Wow.
And every time the head of MI5 got close to this truth, he was immediately suspended or demoted, and they put somebody else in place. So he let a lot of stuff out of the bag, and Margaret Thatcher put Peter Wright on trial for disclosing all this information.
Did you say he wrote two books?
Yeah, the A to Z of spy catching, when they arrested him, and then they didn't put him in prison. They had to let him go, but they did take all the books, and they put them back in the pulp. They pulped them all back to pulp. Yeah.
And the first one was
the fact that Lord Rothschild was the head. He was the fifth man, as they called it. This person who controlled these MI5 double agents in Britain, and Victor Rothschild was the only contact with them all. And And what was more amazing was the fact that every bit of information that, Victor Rothschild was given to do with any of their technology was immediately known to the Soviets, and it could only have been through Victor Rothschild. And
was he the writer after
Peter Wright wrote a book called The Fifth Man, and in it he goes through a lot of this stuff about the Rothschilds. Yeah.
Is that book, was that pulped also?
No, that one's available, and I have it in one of my books.
What's his name?
I can't remember just now.
Okay,
but,
The Fifth Man?
The Fifth Man was the title of the book.
Where was it published, over in England?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. What, Victor Rothschild?
Well, eventually, Victor
Rothschild.
Well,
wait, I wanted to ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Now, Amschel, was he the first Rothschild?
Yeah, that was old Amschel, yeah.
Amschel. So yeah. Victor was down the line a little ways.
Yeah, Victor was, he was in the British Army. He joined the British Army during World War II as a bomb disposal expert, and eventually was promoted up to the head of the scientific and development part of the military.
I
and even after his name was connected to all these MI5 agents that defected to the Soviets, these double agents, rather than kick Rothschild out, he ended up in charge of all the British security forces. That's what Peter Wright was so angry about. But why on earth would you put this guy who was a suspect in charge of all your security forces until you figure it out that the whole thing is nonsense? There was no Cold War. The elite who ruled Britain created an enemy, or a fake enemy, the Great Bear, in Russia, and they created the Cold War, and they had to make it very real to the public, and even to a lot of the smaller players involved in it, like Peter Wright himself. But the fact was, the Soviets couldn't feed themselves from the beginning to the end.
Right.
They couldn't even make a good television set, you know. So they were supported totally by sales of grain from the U.S. and Canada right up until the very end.
I don't think sales, Alan.
I know.
No, there were... No.
Well, we loaned them the money, which they could then buy the grain from us.
You know, there was one thing. I read a book, and this was very early on when I was very first becoming involved.
Uh-huh.
And it was written by, I can't remember, he was a guy that ran for president. But anyway, he told him there about the Export-Import Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I had known about that, but I didn't know what it was.
Uh-huh.
And he explained it, and he used an example. When a private corporation, for example, loans money,
mm-hmm.
and he used an example of the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
and I forget what company it was, that what bank, probably a Rockefeller bank here, that loaned the Soviets hundreds of millions of dollars to build the Kama River plant, mm-hmm. which was a plant that not only built trucks, but all kinds of war machines, war vehicles.
Yeah.
Well, the export-import, is it the import-export or whatever? I think I get it backwards all the time. But anyway, the reason it was set up was to guarantee loans that are made by private corporations to foreign countries if those foreign countries do not pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Export-Import Bank, our tax dollars, reimbursed Rockefeller's Chase Manhattan Bank hundreds of millions of dollars that went over to the Soviet Union to build war vehicles that, in essence, could be used against us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went to a town hall meeting. Dick Durbin was there, our U.S. congressman, mm-hmm. in Carlinville. Alan, talk about an early on education. When he, you know, was taking questions, I had the book there, and it was a paperback. And this guy's name is escaping me, of course, but anyway, I mentioned this, and I said, I'd like to know about this. I'd like you to comment on this, that our tax dollars are being used, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and he looked at me, and he started talking, and he wound all around me, and I'm still standing because I'm waiting for him to respond to my question.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I'm telling you, he just somehow danced around me.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, he was calling on someone else, and I was still standing there. Mm-hmm. And I raised my hand while I was standing up, and he pretended I was invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know the thing is, the thing that shocked me more than anything is that the people who were sitting there didn't say to him, wait a minute, why don't you answer this lady's question?
Mm-hmm.
Respond to what she just said. Do you know what they wanted? Like the next lady that raised her hand?
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to know how come she couldn't, when she had to drive to Springfield to work, she couldn't count it as commute time.
Yeah.
And she wanted some bill passed that would allow her to, you know, deduct that on her income tax. I was in shock, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, I mean...
That's a good example, though, of the purpose of the setting up the Soviet Union. Because it was the dialectic approach to a third way. The first they created capitalism, and then the other side of the coin was communism, and then they blend the two together because of socialized society. And what Lenin said was, when the politicians in the United States begin to discuss during their elections social issues to do with pensions, healthcare, and so on, then they have effectively been socialized. And that would never have happened if it wasn't for the supposed enemy across the
uh-huh.
sea there, the Soviet Union. That was its purpose, was to make the people back home say, well, we better give them some benefits or they may revolt. So this worked very, very well, you know. The countries of the West are all socialized now.
Is there something in the Bible that says, beware of the bear from the north?
No.
Okay, the reason...
No, that was Nostradamus, and it's the same with the yellow hordes. That was Nostradamus, too. It wasn't the Bible.
Because I've told you this, when I was little, I spent a lot of time listening to the adults' conversations,
mm-hmm.
and I remember during, I think it was, it was after the war,
mm-hmm.
you know, World War II, but I remember some lady, some neighbor that used to spout the Bible all the time
uh-huh.
when they were sitting around having coffee, and they were talking about Russia,
mm-hmm.
and she said that in the Bible, I thought she said the Bible, it says, beware of the bear from the north,
yeah.
and that is Russia.
Yeah, you see, in the sky, in the celestial sky, towards the north pole, you'll see the great bear.
Ursa.
And so that's always been associated with Satan,
that
area.
Is that Ursa?
There's Ursa Major and Minor.
Yeah, well,
And also, in the Bible, they make references to Satan living in the north. So that's always been associated with the great bear.
Mm. Well, I can remember walking to school, Alan,
uh-huh.
worrying about whether or not we were going to be attacked
mm-hmm.
by Russia.
Yeah. Yeah. Fear is a fantastic method of controlling millions and millions of people. And because they look towards leadership to take care of things for them, it's a natural tribal instinct which these people at the top understand very well. And they manipulate it to their advantage, and they take advantage of the people all the time. And that's why we're always in a constant state of crisis. There's not been one generation, you know, who've lived in a time of peace from the beginning to the end of their life. Either financial chaos or war or both, but they keep us going up and down like yo-yos.
Yes. And you know what I'd like you to do, our last few minutes here?
Uh-huh.
Comment, address that, how we can know this stuff and not be living in fear, not be living in panic, and know this stuff. Will you talk about that?
Yeah, well, the first thing is not to respond to it. I take it for granted that whatever comes out of the news, I've got plenty of information to back this up, whatever comes out of the news is psychological warfare. It's designed that way. It's not new, by the way. The news business was not taken over recently. It was set up like this. in the 1700s
but
in Britain.
But, Alan, I'm talking about how the topics that we discuss on this broadcast, that it could be very frightening to people.
It can only be frightening if they take it to heart that what's happening is all by chance. When you realize it's all planned this way, you begin to lose your fear, especially when you realize it's always been this way. It's a technique of controlling the people's minds through fear, and once you realize that, you stop fearing them. And of course, you stop using their system. You stop voting even for them.
Yeah.
Why would you vote for a corrupt system that's always been corrupt?
And why would you vote when your vote doesn't count anyway?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So the thing is to take everything with a, not a pinch of salt, but a mountain of salt, because psychological warfare is nothing new. It's been used on your grandparents and their predecessors too. It's ongoing, and it's a technique to make you submit to powerful figures in the system, and so that they can get their way. And their way is always more for them, less for you, and it's a form of tyranny, which we now call democracy. And tyranny is tyranny, doesn't matter what they want to call it, what guise they give it. Stop giving your power to them. Stop worrying about the things they tell you to worry about.
Well,
and start thinking for yourself.
Yes, and not only that, but knowing this,
mm-hmm.
knowing that it's all by design.
Yeah.
For example, the aspartame in the foods.
Uh-huh.
To kill people, to mm-hmm. reduce the population, etc.
Yeah.
To do everything that we can.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, make choices of how we're going to spend our time, Alan.
Absolutely, yeah.
And are we going to go, I'm not going to garden because it's too time-consuming?
Mm-hmm.
And then are we going to eat their poison food and their genetically modified food that genetically modifies the body?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or will we do what we can
mm-hmm.
to live as naturally and free of their system as possible?
And also it takes every individual who knows this stuff to speak out about it. Whoever they meet.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you.
They mustn't be afraid to speak. When you're afraid to speak, the game is over.
Well, yeah. Well, we'll do this some more, won't we, Alan?
Yeah.
Yeah, we will. Thanks so much for being here tonight.
It's a pleasure.
And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tomorrow night on time, bearing any unforeseen incident. Thank you for being here, folks. God bless you. Good night. Night, Alan.
Good night.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War and the Right of Succession from the Old Paths Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free, or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
America is at war.